New on CuriosityStream. Grab your lab goggles. We're out to find the world's coolest, loudest, and most in-your-face experiments.
Wow! That's impressive.
See how hands-on science can change our everyday lives on Oddly Satisfying Science. Plus, from goats to guard dogs, hear surprising stories about the creatures that brought humanity to the next level. It's animals that changed history. Watch now on CuriosityStream. Annual plans are $20, just $1.67 a month. Visit CuriosityStream.com.
This is the beginning. There is a beginning, a middle, and an end. Together, I'll tell you the story of the machine and how the world will end. Griffin and I were both 25. We hadn't seen each other since college and kept in close contact. I was working at a cybersecurity firm, and I really wasn't sure what he had been doing. He always told me he was just working on something. I took a few vacation days from work to go and see him. We went camping for a night. When we woke up the following morning, he told me about the machine. "Wowee! Sure is beautiful," I said, stepping out of my tent. "Damn right it is," Griffin responded. He was a silhouette in front of the red light of dawn creeping over the mountain behind him. "Come here." He was fixing a pot of coffee. "Yes, sir." "It's serious. Come here." I sat beside him on a large log we'd rolled over the night before to sit on around the fire. "What's up?" "I want to tell you," he said. "Tell me what?" "What I've been working on." "Oh, all right. But hear me loud and clear. You can't tell anybody. It's a secret between you, me, and God." "I won't. I swear to—" No. I don't need any promises or swears. I just need your word." "Say it again. You won't tell anybody." "I won't tell anybody, Griff." "Okay, then." He sipped from his thermos and muttered, "A man's only as good as his word." Someone famous said that, I think. "I think that's from the Bible, dude." "Ha! That's funny, considering what I'm about to tell you. Makes me wonder if there is a God." He trailed, looking off in the distance. That uneased me, for some reason. "Go on. Tell." "Let me start off by saying this. I know how it's going to sound. Crazy. I know. You're going to think good old Griff has lost his mind. But bear with me. I have proof. I have it with me." "You have what with you?" "The machine. That's what I call it." "What does it do?" "It can, well, let me show you." He ran to his tent, unzipped something, and came back with a laptop of sorts. But it was heavily modified. And connected to it by wires was a small black box. He put the laptop in his lap and put the box next to him on the ground. "You carried all that on a hike? You could have shown me all this stuff back at your place." "I could have, yes, but I didn't want to. What I have here is a game changer, man. If the government is tapping our phones and TVs, I don't want them to know about this." He pressed a couple buttons, and the machine made a whirring startup sound. "It takes a minute to get going." "What does it do?" I asked again. "It can create, destroy, and transmit matter." He said it bluntly, then sighed long and hard. I could tell he'd been waiting to tell someone about it. I didn't have an answer to what he said. I was silent. I didn't believe him. But at the same time, I believed he was about to show me something. Something I'd never forget. Dread began to boil up inside of me. "You don't believe me," he smiled. "I wouldn't believe me either. But let me show you once this gets working." He patted his hand on the box like a man would pat his dog's head. "You're really telling me that thing can just, what, create something out of nothing?" His smile never thinned. "Yes, and delete something into nothing. And it can move matter in a millisecond. Faster, even. So your box breaks every law of physics." "It's not my box. It's the machine." A couple of beeps came from the modified laptop. He typed a couple things frantically, then looked in my eyes. His smile had been replaced with a stern, determined grimace. "Hold out your hand," he said. I obeyed and held my hand out, palm towards the sky. "Ready?" he said. I nodded wordlessly, my tongue stuck in my throat. He pressed a button, and I felt a weight in my hand instantly, faster even. My jaw dropped slightly, and all my concentration, all my senses, and all my sanity was working overtime to try and comprehend what had just happened. In my hand was a nice, shiny red apple. It came from nowhere. There was no sound, no wind, no whoosh or kapow. It did not exist a second before. But there it was, sitting in my hand. "Hold out your other hand," he said. I was not looking at him, but I knew. He still had his serious face on. I complied and held out my other hand, almost hypnotically. My eyes were still transfixed on the apple. That is until it wasn't there. It had moved to my other hand, if you could even call it moving. It transported. It teleported. It shifted through time and space like it was no big deal. And then a couple seconds later, it vanished, gone. He deleted it, never to be seen again. Astounded, excited, terrified. Those three emotions battled out in my head. I took in a deep draw of air, realizing I had stopped breathing somewhere in those 20 seconds or so. "How?" That was all I could manage to say. "Later," he told me. "Later I'll tell you how everything works. Quit your job. Work with me. I know. It's mind-boggling. Come work with me on it. It can be improved. There's so much to do. But I need a paycheck, and no, you don't." When I said this was a game changer, I meant it. "What do you need money for? Food? We can create all the food you need. You want a new house? We can build one with this. But how are you going to keep the lights on? We hook it up to a battery-run generator, and we simply create and replace the battery with a fresh one every day. Car? Gas? Water? I even had a bank account for a full year, man. And I'll never need another cent again." My hands were still stretched out. My body felt like it was in shock. "Okay. Okay?" His smile reappeared. Okay. Let's do it." He closed the laptop and put it to his side. He cracked a beer open, even though it was 8:30 a.m., and he looked to the sunrise. I turned and watched it too. "The possibilities are endless," he said. "So you've tested it a lot, I'm assuming." "Yeah, a whole lot." "I don't know why my mind went to this, but it did. Have you ever, done it to a human?" He side-eyed me. "Done what?" "Well, you know. Have you ever deleted someone, or moved someone, or created?" He seemed to think on it before responding. "I'm not sure if I can create a human. I don't know the intricacies that go into building a living being. But I've moved myself, teleported, whatever you want to call it. Not far, just to a different room in my house. It's a weird feeling, but it works." I waited for him to go on, but he didn't. So I asked, "And deleted?" "No." He took a swig from his bottle. "I've deleted an insect, though. A spider. He was just gone, like the apple. Never done it to a human." I was relieved he hadn't murdered someone, but then I thought, well, it wouldn't be murder, would it? They wouldn't be dead. They'd just not exist anymore. Every atom of them would be gone from the universe. Any consciousness or awareness they once held would be vaporized into absolutely nothing. Maybe it'd be more peaceful than death. Or maybe it'd be a fate much worse. But then I thought of how this could change everything. This machine could feed the hungry forever. It could erase tumors and cancerous cells. It could provide shelter and clothing for everyone. It could eliminate the need for any transportation. It could clean the atmosphere. It could transport people to other planets instantly. Humans could expand all across the galaxy. The entire universe, maybe. We are going to change the world, I said. We are going to run the world, he responded. As his words died in the morning air, my worries came to life. The machine can destroy anything, idiot, I thought to myself. It can and will destroy. Sure, your goody little two-shoes wants to help humanity, but imagine what would happen if a terrorist organization had it. They could wipe out an entire city at the snap of their fingers. A hostile country could delete an entire continent if they like. Hell, all it'd take is one evil son of a bitch with the key to do that thing to destroy the entire Earth. Or the solar system. Or the universe. These thoughts clashed in my head. I sipped my coffee. Griffin sipped his beer. We watched the sunrise. Whatever was to come, I couldn't stop it now. This is the middle. I spent the next couple months living with Griffin. In that time, he spent almost every day explaining to me how the machine worked. It was very complex, but I finally understood. I will not be explaining to you how it operates, and I hope you'll forgive me for that. And I hope you understand why I refuse to share that knowledge. After learning all there was to learn about it, I posed the question to him. Do you think you could make another? I asked him. Sure, it'd take me a couple of weeks, but... No, I mean, do you think we can create another machine using this machine? He cocked his head back. Wow, I can't believe I hadn't thought of that. So we worked for a few days, programming every detail of the machine into the original machine, and by day five, the code was complete and ready to go. I pressed enter, and there it appeared, a second machine right next to its partner, its creator, its father, its God. Yet, they were equal. Now we each have one, I guess, he said. Thank you, I told him. Thank me? It was your idea. No, not for the machine. For letting me know, for teaching me about it. You're my closest, really, my only friend. I didn't want to go about this alone. He put his hand on my shoulder. So what's the actual plan? What are we going to do with these? Where do we start? I asked. I'm not sure. Do we tell anyone? Hell no. Like I said before, this is a secret between you, me, and God. Okay, but think about it. Think about all the things we've talked about during the past couple months. Cleaning the air, deleting all plastic from the ocean, feeding the hungry, and traveling to Mars and beyond. Those are things that we can't do unnoticed. It's going to get out. He let that rattle around in his head before he replied. That's just talk, though. You know how dangerous this is. I know we've been beating around the bush and not talking about that aspect of this. This can't be public knowledge. This goes beyond danger. If this technology falls into the wrong hands, it's over. Are you saying we don't do anything? I grunted. So, what do we do? Sit here with a thumb in our ass looking at the greatest invention of human history and never use it for good? Is that what you're saying? I don't know what I'm saying. There was a long silence before he spoke again. I don't know. We can't not do anything with it. You're right. You've known about this much longer than I have. What have you been thinking about? What's the end game in this? Honestly? He asked. Honestly, tell me all your thoughts, I said. Well, okay then. I'll tell you. My entire thought processes. The good, the bad, and the horrific. I've thought about all the good stuff like you have. Helping the hungry, the poor, all that. But to tell you the truth, I'm afraid of that too. Why? Let's add to that too. Why not? Let's give out free generators to every home and building in the world, like our houses have. And once a day, the batteries are replaced with new ones. So we have free food and water, free shelter, and free energy. Okay. Well, then no one will want to work anymore. Why should they? What do they need money for? All their basic needs will have been met. That's millions, if not billions, of people quitting their jobs because they don't need to work. That kind of sounds nice, actually. Everyone would be relaxed. Sure, at first. But you know who else stops working? EMTs, police officers, firemen. Those people that work long hours and save lives every day no longer have a reason to go in. Doctors who study for years and step into six-figure debt willingly, they won't want to practice medicine anymore. In school? Why go? What's making anyone want to go? On top of that, who would teach? There'd be a billion dummies by the next decade who don't know how to read or write. So if we give it to the public, we're screwed. The whole world is screwed. I hadn't considered any of this. I was stunned. And he wasn't done talking. I've also thought about using it for other things, though. Let's say we keep this private. What would we do with it? We could use it for other purposes. My eyes had widened. I knew what he meant, but I still asked. Like what? Any way we like. Let's go right to the extremes, shall we? Imagine a politician live on TV making some big announcement to the nation. I nodded. And all of a sudden, he drops dead. All we have to do is shift his brain stem an inch to the left, or, let's get even more graphic. We just delete the guy's head right on national TV. A clean cut, right across the neck. We delete every atom in his head and boom, gone, dead, no one knows why. Or we delete his entire brain. The autopsy comes back and no one knows what to make of it. Biggest news story of the century. We could create a new genocide. We could create a new virus every day and spread it worldwide. We could create an asteroid and send it straight into Earth. I couldn't believe the things he was saying now. Things I didn't know a regular person could think. He kept on, his face reddening and eyes were bulging. Or let's think even bigger. We could change the entire atmosphere on Mars, make it just like Earth's, nice and stable. Then we teleport ourselves and the machine there. We can bring a couple ladies and start a whole new town. A whole new planet. And we can look to the pale blue dot in the sky that we once called home. Look at everything we knew. Everything we loved. Every ounce of human history. And burn the bitch to the ground. And when the fire goes out, we delete it. Like it never existed in the first place. My mouth was slightly open from shock. I was at a loss for words, yes, but found my footing and spoke. But you don't actually want to do those things, right? Right? He panted a little. He was out of breath, his face slowly coming back to its original color. No, God no. I wouldn't do any of that. But you asked what I've been thinking about, and you asked me to be honest. Yeah, I guess. I've thought about some of that too, maybe not quite as detailed, I guess. You asked for honesty, and whether you like it or not, the human brain has its dark places. I'd never act on it, they're just thoughts, and I was sharing them. I know, Griff, I know, just thoughts. Just thoughts, I supposed. Yeah, like gunning down a bunch of high schoolers, or flying a plane into a building. These are just intrusive thoughts that people have sometimes. Maybe a lot of people. But it only takes one person crazy enough to act on those thoughts. So we can't take it public, and we aren't going to be killing anyone or destroying the planet. What do we do? He shrugged. We have fun, I guess. We did have fun. For a while. We lived in nice houses we designed ourselves. We drove nice cars we created. Not as hard as it sounds, surprisingly. We drank and ate in excess, and we never paid for any of it. When we wanted to go out to bars, clubs, or restaurants and pay for things, that wasn't a problem either. Once we figured out how to create legitimate $100 bills, we could pay for anything. No one would ever be able to tell the difference because there wasn't a single atom out of place. Then Griff found heroin. I do not want this to become a story of addiction. No, a story of addiction would be about a man struggling to survive, battling out his demons, losing money, and finding a balance between substance and family. No. Once Griffin found heroin, nothing else existed for him. Heroin in the machine was all he needed. He never had to pay for it either. When he wanted a fix, he simply typed the command in the machine and there it was, ready in a nice, clean needle waiting to be stuck in his vein. He never left the house after that. Why would he? He needed nothing outside his bedroom as long as the machine was there. That was one possibility we didn't even consider. Something so simple that we both overlooked. I would do anything to go back to that day we were camping and make an oath that we'd never touch any drugs again. What a mistake. Griffin died of an overdose on December 24th, 2018. I found him the next day. He never got to open his present. How? How could a man with all the power in the universe, more power than any man had held before, fall so feebly to something so plain? He was a god walking among men, and was taken down by an ounce of liquid in a syringe. He had an endless path of wonder and possibilities in front of him, and he chose not to go. He chose to stand still. I chose not to stand still. I was about to get busy. Very busy. I was alone, me and my two machines. The universe was my playground. Griffin was gone, but his knowledge was not. I had that. Yes, I had that. A secret between me and God, and no one else. This is the end. It wasn't easy getting over Griffin's death, but I'll spare you the details of my mourning and coping. When Griff died, I had, an epiphany of sorts, an awakening. I realized I'm only human, and so was he. But we were acting like we were gods. We thought we had everything. We broke the laws that the universe had set, and we gave the middle finger to the cosmos. We are the outlaws of the universe, the writers of the rules, with no police in sight, Griff used to say. But we weren't. We were two humans, mortal and easily wounded. We would die off eventually and be a useless sack of bone and flesh just like everyone else. We just found a little loophole in the universe, something that God forgot to patch up. But with the machine came power. There was no denying that. I was human, yes, but I wielded a weapon no one else had. It would be like bringing a nuclear bomb to a sword fight. That's what I thought. A weapon no one else had. A tool no one else had. In those couple months that passed after his death, I thought of destroying the machine. But of course I didn't. I didn't want to go back to my old life. I didn't want to work all day. I wanted to have a good time and I wanted to change the world. I didn't have a good time, though. I was an absolute shut-in. I worked day and night for months on the solution. Let me tell you how I was going to try to help humanity. Here's what I programmed into the machine, roughly, in layman's terms. Copy Earth into the machine. Remove human beings, animals, and any sentient life from copy. Remove atmospheric pollution from copy. Remove man-made everything from the copy. Infrastructure, roads, waste, etc. Replace man-made infrastructure with roughly the same terrain from surrounding environment. I know that doesn't seem like a lot, but it took a long, long time to get all that programmed correctly. And I know there are some issues with this. But compared to other solutions I had thought of, the drawbacks were minimal. My plan was to place this edited copy of Earth on the other side of the sun. Do you get it? There'd be a second Earth, the same distance from the sun but on the other side of it, revolving around the same direction and speed that Earth is. Then, after I would place it there, scientists would find out quickly of its existence, and we could travel to it and start anew. A whole new clean planet for mankind. It was a temporary solution, but nonetheless a solution. A step in the right direction. I was about 2 days out from executing the commands and placing New Earth into existence. Unfortunately, something happened before I could do that. I was sitting on my bed staring at the machine, just thinking. I can't remember what about exactly, but all of a sudden one of them disappeared. It happened right in front of my eyes. Deleted. Erased. Vanished. Or taken. I wondered for a split second. But it wasn't just gone. In its place, a note laid on the ground. I walked over to it. It was a single sheet of yellow paper torn off of a legal pad. It had coordinates written on them, and then beneath it said, "Let's talk here." Dread flowed through my veins and filled my brain, but I managed to stay calm. I googled the coordinates, making sure I wasn't about to transport myself to the middle of the ocean, or some volcano. I wasn't. The coordinates were set for somewhere in Utah, USA. There was nothing around for miles. I guess that was the safest place to talk. Like when Griffin told me about the machine in the mountains, I recalled. I put the coordinates in the machine and set it for me and the machine so I had a way to get back to be transported there. I hit enter. And just like that, faster than I could blink, I was standing in a cornfield in the middle of Utah. The machine laid next to me on the dirt. I heard the corn stalks jostle around in front of me, and emerging from the noise was a figure, slowly approaching. He was wearing jeans, a white t-shirt, and cowboy boots. His hair was white and matched the scruff on his face. "Hello," he said in a deep, flat voice. "Hi," I said simply. We stood unmoving, just staring at each other, sizing each other up, maybe. "I assume you know why I asked you to come here." "The machine?" "Yes, if that's what you want to call it." "You have one too, huh?" He laughed at this. He laughed for a long time. "No, boy, no. My machine is right up here." He tapped his finger on his forehead. "How?" But before I could finish, he took the same finger from his head and pointed it at the machine lying next to me. It disappeared immediately. "You see," he said, "I don't need a hunk of metal like you do." I was dumbfounded. "What are you?" He walked a little closer to me. "If you're religious, you'd call me God, or perhaps the devil. And what would you call yourself?" Maybe a little bit of both. "There's no use for names where I come from." "And where is that? Where do you come from?" "Utah." He said that with a straight face. I furrowed my brow. It was silent. Then he busted out laughing again, harder this time. Oh man. Oh, I almost had you, didn't I? Utah. Me. From Utah. He kept laughing. "What is wrong with you? What do you want?" He calmed down some. "I wanted to let you know that it's over. This whole universe thing." What do you mean?" "Well, the whole reason your machine thingy works at all is because this universe is broken. I'm going to start all over." "Start over?" "Yes, start over. Delete and then let there be light again and all that jazz." "So you created all this. You really are like a god." He shrugged. "I created it, yes." "Why not just fix this one? You don't have to delete a whole universe because one guy figured out a mistake in it." "Maybe I'd fix it if this happened earlier, like in the 1200s or so. I would have fixed it. All the good stuff came after that, the things I didn't want to miss, Black Plague, slavery, the most exciting wars, genocide, etc., etc." "What? The good stuff? What the hell are you talking about?" "Oh, don't act so surprised. You think I created an entire universe so I could watch people hold hands and sing happy songs? No, 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 that's no fun. You know what fun is, huh? Do you want to know what is fun?" His voice was growing more maniacal, more wicked sounding. I didn't answer. I knew he would continue anyway. He smiled wide. "What's fun is watching your stupid little monkey brains develop over hundreds of thousands of years. One day, one of you rubs two sticks together and creates fire. You ooh and ah over the pretty bright lights. But then you discover it's hot, so ouch, don't touch. And then you beat all odds against you, and somehow start communicating and developing language. Building relationships, trust. then your stupid little monkey brain stumble upon the idea of putting food in the ground to grow. Farming, ding, ding, ding. And you build little cities around those farms. You start marking whose property is whose. You begin to trade with other little stupid monkey brain communities. You do this for a long time and some battles take place, but then real civilization comes next. Rome is built. Education is more widespread, and your stupid little monkey brains are getting smarter. Empires rise and fall. Countries are resurrected and borders are drawn. Wars are fought. Your brains are now smart, you think. You build transportation. Boats turn into trains, and trains turn into cars, and cars turn into airplanes. Your first weapons were sticks and fire, and now you have weapons so powerful everyone is too scared to use them. But what never stops is the fighting. Oh, how great it is to watch. You fight over invisible lines you call borders, skin color, and birth location, and whose god is the right one. That's my favorite. A fight as old as humans, which god is the real one. All the while, I sit here and laugh at you all. Me, I laugh. I'm your master. I'm your god. I'm your devil. I stood frozen, hesitant to move or talk, unsure if I even could. You see now, he said. All the fun stuff is in the past now. The credits are about to roll. The climax is over and done with. In a decade or two, this world will have ended by nuclear bombs and the nuclear winter that follows. Or a little later down the line, the pollution would be so bad you'd suffocate yourselves. That's not fun to watch. That's boring. You see now, yes? I don't care to stick around for that. That's watching the credits roll. The show is over. I still hadn't moved, but gained some composure. I tried to ignore everything he'd said, but I still asked. Is it just us in this universe? Is there not life anywhere else? No other planet to keep you entertained? He crossed his arms. Think of Earth as a nutrient. You eat dinner, you absorb the nutrient, you crap out everything else the next day. Okay. You see, Earth is that tiny bit of nutrients that's important. The rest, he gestured toward the sky, is waste. Cosmic waste, just a byproduct of creating this planet. Earth is the only thing that matters. I'd never felt so small in my entire life until he spoke those words. All that space in the universe, with nothing inhabiting it. It's just us, all alone on a floating rock. I was stunned, angry, and upset. Why are you telling me this? Because deleting an entire universe takes time. It's fragile. Very fragile. I can't have things being created, destroyed, or moving during the process. Yeah, well, what if I go home and build another machine? I could delete you. He laughed again, only slightly. You think you could do that? Sure, this form I take now is made up of atoms and molecules, but I am not. I'm something your simple brains can't even fathom. I exist beyond this universe. You can't destroy me even if you tried. I felt like I was about to cry. Why can't you just leave this universe alone? There's only room for one at a time. Don't take it personally, kid. You'll still be around for a couple months, maybe a year. Try to enjoy it. Like I said, it takes time. I had nothing else to say for the first time, and neither did he. He simply pointed at me, and all at once I was back in my bedroom. Alone. All alone. I sat still for a couple of hours, hoping it was all a fever dream of sorts, but I knew it wasn't. Now I tell you all this to say, do not blame me. Do not shoot the messenger. Without Griffin's discovery of the machine, we wouldn't even have any warning at all. So spend time with your loved ones, and do what makes you happy. Be good to others and live a good life while you can. There's nothing we can do. It won't be too long until we're gone. A secret between you, me, and God. I had been feeling it for days. My mouth ached and spiked with pain. It started low and slowly got worse, as if someone was holding my jawbone above a slowly rising campfire. For the first day or two, it was easy enough to ignore. In fact, I couldn't feel it at all if I was focusing on something else. It was always the worst at night, and I would toss and turn unless I popped some Advil to help take the edge off. My dentist had been hounding me to get my wisdom teeth removed for almost a year at this point. So after a few days of suffering, I caved and made an appointment for a few weeks later, to my insurance premium's dismay. As days inched past, the fire burned ever hotter in my mouth. I rubbed my tongue over my gums in my cubicle like a dog staring at a steak, desperately trying to focus. I'm usually a deep sleeper, so I was surprised that one singular crack woke me up in the dead of night. Apartments settle, and I have neighbors. Life is no slasher movie, and I desperately needed the rest, so I ignored it. I know hindsight is 20/20, but be honest with yourself. What would you have done? And besides, I never would have guessed what was happening, so it wouldn't have mattered. The next morning, I was poring over emails and memos and ran my tongue over my inflamed gums. There was something different about my little self-soothing exercise today. I started to notice these little bumps all along my gums. They were spaced out almost evenly, shaped almost like a fingernail, poking up at me from just beneath the surface. Everything feels so magnified when it's in your mouth. A small bite of food can be enough to choke on. The small tug of braces can seem unbearable, and I was always surprised by how small my baby teeth seemed when they fell out. Maybe that's why I decided to call back into the dentist. Maybe I overreacted. Maybe I was justified. But I was freaked out, regardless. "Johnson Family Dentistry, how may I help you?" A woman's voice bubbled through the phone after the first ring. "Hey, yeah, this is..." Name redacted. "I'm supposed to get my wisdom teeth removed this weekend, but I think something is wrong." "Oh dear, what's wrong?" Her voice contained just enough urgency to let me know she shared my concern, and that helped me calm down. "Oh, I wouldn't worry about that," she bubbled over the phone once I finished explaining my situation. She explained that it was likely swelling caused by my wisdom teeth fighting for space in my mouth. "I need to make sure not to take any over-the-counter medication in the 48 hours leading up to my surgery, and that everything would be fine." She also assured me that they would be more than happy to arrange for emergency surgery if the pain became too severe. As if. Too much of this was coming out of my own pocket in the first place. The pain got worse. I was sleeping less and less. The popping and cracking at night got louder and more frequent. I searched the walls and ceilings for fissures and put in a call to my landlord. I had switched out my tongue for the meaty part of my thumb, pressing against the protrusions that I swore were moving and growing. I told myself to trust the professionals. It was just swelling, but they felt so solid that it was hard to believe. Regardless, it was Thursday night. I had practically made it. I knew I could hold out for two more days and went to bed, foregoing my usual regimen of various nighttime and PM painkillers. It was as if thunder cracked in my mouth. The searing pain jolted me awake and forced a gasp from my lips. Lashing out with my arm, I grabbed my cell phone and flicked on the front camera. A thin trickle of blood was making its way down my lower lip and began to drip down my chin. I opened my mouth. My lower left canine had split down the middle, ivory flecked with pink blood. A surprisingly spongy interior. Blood pooled in my mouth, washing my tongue with its iron-tinted taste. Every shallow breath brought a new stab of pain. "Fit." I managed the expletive as I muttered the expletive by speaking without closing my mouth. I must have been grinding my teeth all night and somehow broke this one. I touched my fractured tooth gingerly, but it still made me flinch. I pulled the chain on my bedside lamp, partially illuminating the walls of my bedroom. The next pop was practically deafening. My tooth exploded into small slivers, flying out of my mouth like shrapnel. The pain was even worse than a moment ago. The popping and cracking came closer together and more intense. I had no choice but to fall onto all fours on my bed. A war zone raged in my ears. Razor-sharp fragments of enamel and bone sliced up my tongue, cheeks, and throat. The trickle of blood falling from my gaping mouth intensified into a scream, flowing out of me and staining my sheets a dark red, spotted with fragments of teeth and flesh. As my body continued to tear itself apart, I felt an enormous pressure building in my lower jaw and the roof of my mouth. Something was tearing its way up through the mangled remains of my gums. The pain and pressure continued to crescendo. My jaw began to bend until, with the loudest crack yet, it broke. I woke up with my face stuck to the sheet and covered in dried blood. I slowly ripped my face away from the bed, reigniting the pain in my fractured jaw and leaving some hair behind. Slowly and shakily, I got to my feet and looked in the mirror. Where my face wasn't covered in blood, it was gaunt and white. My jaw jaggedly broke down in a diagonal line away from the rest of my face. Despite the pain, I forced my mouth slightly open. Everything tasted like rotten meat and metal. Where my teeth once were, and under a thick layer of coagulated mucus-like blood, were 32 molars. Cupid's mouth is a genetic condition that affects one in every 2.5 million people. I was born with two sets of teeth like everyone else, but as I got older, I developed a third comprised entirely of molars. My jaw was crowded with new teeth until it broke. My soft palate stretched until it tore. After reconstructive surgery, getting the molars filed down, having veneers put in, and yes, getting my wisdom teeth removed, you can barely tell what happened. Cupid's mouth is rare. Extremely rare. But there are no genetic markers, no way to tell if it's dormant within you. Check your mouth. If you find any bumps, don't panic. It's probably just swelling. It was the strangest thing, walking into the kitchen for breakfast to find Dad sitting at the table, sober for once. My little sister was already there. She turned to me and smiled cheerily. Morning. Hi, I murmured. She continued scoffing the pancakes in front of her. Pancakes. Only Dad got pancakes. We got toast, but today Dad had nothing but an empty plate. I sat down in front of the serving I assumed was mine, but I was hesitant to eat. Where's Mom? I asked, no one in particular. She has a headache, Dad answered. I couldn't meet his eyes. Eat up. She made them for you. I stuck a fork into my food and ate, all the while staring at the table. I couldn't have been more relieved when it was time for school. It felt like the zone in there. I informed my best friend Stu later. I dawdled home that evening. Things changed sometimes. They got good, but it never lasted more than a few hours a day if we were lucky. And it was always worse after. I almost tripped on Lily's bag when I got in. She dumped it right by the door. I picked it up and made to sneak to our room. She knew Dad hated messes. Now we'd both pay. As I passed the kitchen, I fully expected it to be empty, because Dad sat in the lounge after work. But it wasn't empty. Dad was in there, at the table, exactly where he'd been this morning. Mom was doing the dishes behind him. I froze like a deer in headlights. Hi, Joe, Dad said. Hi. The plates and cups clattered in the sink before Mom. Hey, baby, dinner's at 6. Tell your sister. Okay, I managed before scuttling to my room. Lily was already in there, lying on her bed and listening to music through headphones. I dropped her bag and snatched the headphones off her head. Hey! She sat up and attempted to snatch them back. You know the rules, I hissed. No music before 5. Dad doesn't care, Lily whined. I stared at her gobsmacked. Dad doesn't care? After everything. How could she say that? Sure, things were weird right now, but she knew. She knew he'd be back to normal any second. Why poke a sleeping bear? I shook my head disappointingly. No, music. Lily stood up on her bed and stared down at me. You're going to just be like him if you keep that up. Her words stung. I just wanted to protect her. He's been there all day, you know, she added, sitting down again. And I asked Mom if I could listen to music, and she told me to ask Dad, and he said sure, right in front of her. As I digested her words, she snatched her headphones back, tucked them over her ears, and laid down with her back to me. I sat on my bed. What the hell was going on? I was too afraid to verify what she claimed, and didn't really believe it, so I just waited for the eventual stomp down the hallway. But it never came. At 6, Lily and I went into the kitchen for dinner. Two places were set at our little round table, just like breakfast. We had a nice pork chop, each, and a heap of vegetables and mashed potato. Dad sat before his empty plate. Mom was nowhere to be seen. Heya, he said. Hi, Dad, Lily replied. I admired her ability to just go with it. We sat down and began to eat when beckoned to do so by Dad. Eventually, it was too much. I had to ask, Dad, where's yours? My voice always came out so meek when talking to him. I hated it. He sniffed. That was a tell of his. When he was getting angry, just like a pig, Mom told me one night after his tantrums. Just like a pig. Don't worry about mine. Just eat. Eat up and... Darling! Mom's voice rose from their bedroom down the hall. Dad's face dropped, like I'd never, ever seen. He went pale. His lips quivered into a smile directed at me. Is it nice? Mm-hmm. I continued to eat. Lily was staring between us like a tennis match. I couldn't sleep after. I lay in bed in the dark with butterflies stabbing my stomach. Something was very wrong. I hadn't really talked to Mom since the day before yesterday. It was like she was avoiding us. And Dad, what the hell was happening there? Are you awake? Lily's whisper interrupted my thoughts. Yeah. Okay, good night. I sat up on my elbows. Lily, when you talked to Mom before, how was she? Was she okay? I asked as quietly as I could. Voices traveled in this house since all the doors were taken away. She seemed okay, I guess. You guess? Did she have bruises or... I don't know. She never turned around. So that was it. He'd beat her up real bad, and now he was playing nice for a little while. I fell asleep worrying. The sound of dishes woke me up early. I immediately got up, hoping to get Mom alone before school. But it was no use. Dad was already there. Or maybe he never left. He looked a little bit gray. A little bit sweaty. For the first time in my life, I decided to be brave. Mom, I said. She didn't stop washing up. Mom, I have to talk to you. Alone. Dad eyed me. Not now, baby, Mom replied. Mom, please, I have to talk to you. Darl, maybe you should talk to her, Dad suggested. Mom froze. It was so funny, so strange. Dad being the one to walk on eggshells. He sensed she wasn't happy behind him, and out came that pitiful smile again. Please. Darling, you don't speak to me, remember? His smile faltered. You can't keep me here. Leave then. Mom replied quietly. I backed up. Any minute now. Any minute and he'd... Please. 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 Dad grit out. I'm sorry. How many times do I have to say it? What can I do? You can sit there, just like you are, said Mom. Her voice was so clear. So unafraid. Dad pounded his fist on his plate. It shattered and he cut his palm but didn't care. I jumped and almost ran. You bitch, Dad whispered. I should have smashed your head all the way true. I... But you did, darling. Don't you remember? It was too much. I didn't understand. So I ran outside, still in my PJs, ran to me and Stu's favorite hideaway. Lily came and found me hours later. We walked home in silence. Dinner's at 6, Mom said from the sink when we entered. Since then, I've just gone with it. The both of us have. Lily even put a party hat on Dad. Mom makes us food, she cleans the dishes, and we do the rest. Everything. Down to paying the bills with Dad's money. I haven't seen her face in so long, and Dad never leaves the table. He's beginning to stink. The first time it happened was in a day I woke up with a huge hangover. The drinking age is so stupid in the U.S. How can you operate a huge box of metal that constantly kills people at 16, but only have a simple beer 5 years later? I'm Barbara, age 19. I've been drinking with my boyfriend and his friends lately, and having the occasional joint, nothing different than most people my age. Last weekend, one of the boys brought LSD. One thing led to another, and I ended up having an unknown pill. Yeah, I know that as a woman, I should be extra careful with these things. But I trust Mike, and I'm sure he wouldn't let anything bad happen to me. The pill was very small and generic, and I felt nothing different. Maybe Tyler, the friend who brought it, was just messing with us. I'm in college, but still living at my parents' house. I wanted to skip my classes that morning, but Mom hurried me out of bed. I couldn't let her know I've been drinking this much or having weird pills, so I had to go. After drinking lots of water and taking a cold bath, I left. My body felt heavy, my head felt terrible, and my mouth felt dry, but nothing I hadn't experienced before. I blacked out during my classes. It was awful going to my part-time job that afternoon. Everything felt so loud and bright. I had to ask my best friend from work to cover for me while I took a nap in the back room. It was fine. I had done the same favor to her before. I dreamed I was eating her hand and a customer's face. I thought it was funny. Working in retail is stressful enough to cause this kind of subconscious ideas. I finally got home, feeling immensely thankful for having someone else to cook for me. I would starve or spend too much in takeout if I lived alone. After dinner, I decided to go to bed early, with an extra large bottle of water and a handful of aspirins. I slept for a few hours until I woke up feeling terribly hungry. No, terribly hungry doesn't even begin to describe how it felt. It was like I never knew what food was before. Like I had lived years in absolute starvation, and nothing in the world was more important or more urgent than eating. Eating real food. Eating something alive, with warm blood still pulsating inside it. The house was quiet and very dark, but I suddenly had eyes so well adjusted that I could see perfectly during the night, maybe even better than I could before in the light. Everyone was asleep, but I distinctively heard three heartbeats other than mine. And they sounded delicious. I started by my younger sister, Bethany. She always kept her leg out of the blanket, so I snatched that first. I was so hungry and so fast, she didn't even wake up while I feasted on her. She was like baby beef, small and full of fat. But this treat was not enough. I moved to my parents' bedroom. Dad was thin and had been muscular during his younger years, so his meat was surely tough. I started by Mom, chubby and tender. In the back of my mind, I had the sense that they were my family, but it was a fact that didn't matter. I was starving, and they were there. It was only natural that I would feed on their irresistible flesh. The only important thing was eating. Dad woke up when I was eating Mom's last leg. He had always been a light sleeper. I was being careless and messy, so the wall and part of the bed was completely tainted by her blood. As soon as I sensed Dad opening his eyes, I quickly jumped on him, suffocating his surprised cries with my bloodied hand. Mom didn't completely satisfy my hunger, but I was feeling better. I carefully teared through Dad's belly, eating only the juicier parts. After eating Bethany and Mom whole and Dad's internal organs, I went back to bed, leaving his remains there. Maybe I would wake up feeling like having a little leftover snack. This hunger, this speed, and these sharp senses were too new for me, and I didn't know what to expect. In fact, I barely acknowledged them. Everything felt natural, like it had always been this way. I went back to bed and slept until morning. For a glorious moment, I almost laughed it off like it was just a weird and realistic dream. However, I soon noticed that my face, hands, and pajamas were drenched in blood and screamed. "What happened, dear?" Mom came running to my bedroom very alive. "What the hell, Barbara?" I didn't know what to say. I had no explanation for this, especially because she was alive. I had just devoured her, but she stood in front of me like nothing happened. Dad and Bethany came running to see what was going on. They were alive as well, despite the fact that I could still feel their metallic taste. Once delicious, it made me nauseous now. "Ew, did someone have their period on your face?" Bethany mocked me. She was getting sassier every day. "Shut up, Beth. Your sister's hurt," Dad scolded her. I ended up saying it was a terrible nosebleed because I've been sleepwalking and got hurt. I also said I was feeling sick, and it wasn't a lie. I looked awful, so Mom let me spend the day in bed. It was terrifying remembering how I'd torn apart my family's flesh. I puked more than 10 times along the day. Every time Mom brought me something to eat or Bethany checked on me, I couldn't help but cry. I felt disgusted, and scenes contained their dismembered, bloodied bodies flashed on my mind again and again. Too real, like I was reliving them every time. But it didn't stop me from waking up during the dawn again, feeling an unbearable urge to eat my whole family alive. And I did. I chewed them to the bones one more time. And the night after. And the night after. They were always alive when I woke up the next day, no matter how brutally I dilacerated their bodies. After 4 nights being eaten alive, I noticed my family started to change. By morning, all 3 of them looked worn out. Their skin was dry and grayish, and they had giant brown circles under their eyes. They seemed very under the weather, but nothing different happened. I ate them again that night. I should have tried to do something to restrain myself, or tie my own body to the bed, but I knew I was amazingly strong when I woke up hungry. I knew nothing would stop me from feeding on human flesh. The next day, Mom, Dad, and Bethany looked worse, grayer, slower, and generally creepier. Their skin looked like it was about to crumble and turn to ashes. They moved heavily, mechanically, tiredly. "Mom," Bethany said like she was in slow motion, "I don't feel good. I'm not going to school today. I don't feel good either," Dad said in a grave and distorted voice. Let's just rest. My mother's voice was creepily sluggish as well. Unlike them, I never felt better. The feelings of guilt had disappeared. My skin was glowing and my body was full of energy. Mom slowly turned her head to look at me, probably to ask if I felt ill too. But it was like she forgot how to use her body. Her neck spun a little too much and her flesh ripped off. You could see the muscles underneath, but instead of the normal color, they showed a sickly shade of purple. Neither Dad nor Bethany showed any kind of reaction. Very slowly, Mom readjusted her head in the right angle, using both hands. Her face was an expressionless mask, like pain was something that belonged to a distant past. I'm so hungry. Hungry for real food. I'm hungry too, Dad and Beth echoed, like the creepiest chorale. That night, I didn't wake up feeling hungry, but they did. They were by the side of my bed, begging me to feed them. So that's my situation now. I was turned into some kind of monster and ate three people. My family. Alive. After 5 days, I completely drained their vitality. Now they need to feed on others. I've been kidnapping my neighbors to nourish my starving family. And more people around me started to look grayish and slow. It's a damn plague. And it spreads exponentially. I wish I could find explanations, and I wish I never took that mystery pill. I can't seem to contact my boyfriend Mike or any of his friends, but I've been dreaming of Tyler laughing uncontrollably. The worst part is, after a few days not needing to eat during the dawn, I'm getting hungry again. Hungry for real food. Working at a psychiatric hospital, I thought I had seen everything. We had a delusional old lady that thought she was Cleopatra for the last 30 years and absolutely freaked out if you didn't tell her what Mark Anthony was doing. A man that tried to kill his younger brother, drowning him in holy water, because he claimed the child was the Antichrist. A teenage boy that firmly believed to be a lawnmower. He never talked, only made whirring noises. But all of this looked like children's play when I was assigned to Amanda Jameson. Amanda was only 28. Her crooked figure made me uneasy, but if you looked at her normal parts, you could see she used to be a girl-next-door type of beauty. She was smart, too. When all of this started, Amanda was enrolled in a good university. Others had been assigned to her before, and I had their notes, but I still had to interview Amanda and make her repeat her story to me. Every single nurse and psychiatrist that took care of her had abruptly quit the job. I knew one of the nurses, Jocelyn, and called to know what was going on after she stopped showing up at work. After I insisted a lot, her sister simply told me Jocelyn had decided to move to another state and wouldn't talk to anyone she knew before. I sighed deeply and entered Amanda's room. She was fidgeting with a small plastic bear holding a red heart. "Hello, Amanda. I'm Dr. Hudson, but you can call me Lena. How are you today?" "Hello, Dr. Lena Hudson," she answered emotionlessly. She was still scratching her left eye, or what was left of it. "Same as always, thank you." The files said Amanda suffered from an unknown psychosis, but at first glance, she seemed in full possession of her mental faculties. I would do my best not to let it fool me, but showed no signs of insanity whatsoever. It was an impression hard to shake off. "I know you have been through this before, but bear with me. I need you to tell me how it all started, if you please." "I was 20. And living with my college boyfriend," she said, still in a neutral, lucid tone.
I always had allergies, so I was no stranger to feeling my eyes itchy. But it wasn't even spring, and it seemed abnormal to me. You know when you come out of the shower and find loose strands of hair everywhere in your body? It was something like that. Yes, I know the feeling. It's pretty annoying, I agreed. I felt really thin and long hair inside my left eye. I spent some good minutes in front of the mirror trying to find it and grab it, but I couldn't. I couldn't. She repeated, sounding a little distressed. Now my eyes not only were itchy, they were also very red and sore. Fortunately, Henry's older brother is an ophthalmologist. Henry was my boyfriend back then, she explained. I told him I really needed to have my eye examined because something was wrong with it. He started to say I just need to stop scratching it and use some eye drop, but I was physically unable to stop. The itching was so bad. When Henry saw how swollen my eye was, he called his brother, Dr. E, and took me there. As expected, by Henry, Dr. E said nothing was wrong with me. He said there was nothing inside my eye and that I just had a bad case of allergies. I don't blame Dr. E. He examined me thoroughly and gave me a corticosteroid eye ointment. I know that usually it would be enough, but it wasn't the case for me. He's really nice, you know. He still visits me sometimes and says he's sorry he couldn't help me better. I'm glad to know it, Amanda, I sympathetically remarked. Anyway, that night is hell. I can't sleep. I put the ointment, but I really have to scratch, and I really need to grab the hair. It bothers me so much. So much. It's hard to describe how desperate the feeling was. So I do it, and take all the eye medicine off so I have to put it again. But I also need to scratch again. I know how it sounds, like I'm childish. I have no self-control. It's just a normal allergic crisis. I just have to stop scratching it and get some sleep, and things will be fine. But they won't. They won't. I used to have a strong mind. But this is so bad. It's so bad I want to die. I couldn't sleep at all that night, and the itching was unbearable. My eye was so sore and swollen I couldn't even open it. The other eye was completely normal. Why, doctor? Why only one of my eyes was this bad? I don't think you're childish, Amanda, I replied with sincerity. I had no other answer to offer. I make it through the night somehow, but every second is torture. I can't stress this enough. It's pure hell. She flinches, remembering the sensation. Henry leaves for his classes. I'm desperate for the itch to stop. I do something dumb, something I know it's dumb, but I don't mind, because the only important thing is getting rid of the invisible hair. I grab tweezers and try to pick the hair inside my eye with them. I do my best to suppress an ouch. It hurt so much, doctor. I'm starting to go out of my mind. My sclera is completely effed up. The whole area of my left eye is bleeding, and I'm probably going permanently blind by now. But I just want it to stop. I just want it to stop. I just want it to stop. She makes a long pause. I understand you, Amanda. What happened after you tried to use the tweezers? After 2 hours of agony using the tweezers, for a glorious moment I felt like I was able to pull the hair off. I never felt this relieved in my life. But then I became paranoid. I can't let it happen again. It will kill me. It will drive me insane. She gestured around the room with bitter irony. You know it did. You're not necessarily insane, Amanda, You just have an unknown problem, and you're safer here. She gave me a half smile, but unfortunately it was creepier than anything I ever saw. I did my best not to show how her smiling face terrified me. Thank you, Doctor. Anyway, once again I was being irrational, and I knew it. But being rational didn't matter at the time. I only cared about not feeling that terrible agony again. So I got rid of all the hairs on my body. Protecting my eyes, I waxed myself. I went bald. I removed my eyebrows and even my eyelashes. I looked like a freaky monster, but it wasn't important to me. I then cleaned the house like a crazy person. I vacuumed everything too. I threw a lot of clothes and stuff away, and I refused to let Henry get in unless he had zero hairs on his body too. Did he comply? No, I don't think anyone in their right mind would do it. Poor Henry went to stay at his friend's house and called my parents. They were surprised because I had no story of mental issues. Nor did anyone in my family. She bit her horrendously deformed lip. Shortly after, Henry gave up on getting in. I realized just getting rid of all that hair wasn't enough. I had to make sure it couldn't enter. She paused. I see. So I got my sewing kit and stitched my eye. I shivered. When my family found me, I looked awful. My whole body was naked in every sense. I refused to wear clothes because they have tiny hairs. Even now, I only wear seamless plastic stuff. My eye was awfully swollen and stitched. I screamed the whole time that they had to get rid of all their hairs to be in contact with me. I'll admit to you, I was a mess, Doctor. It was the first time I was put here. You're very brave to share your story, and your point of view is very reasonable, Amanda, I encouraged her. Thank you, Doctor. After that, I was put to sleep most of the time. It was a relief because I know I wasn't in my right mind, and despite my relief, I was still feeling paranoid. After a few days, my fear proved to be true, and it simply came back. It came back, Doctor. The invisible hair. The unbearable itching that literally drove me insane. It was back inside my stitched eye. How did it get in, Doctor? Deep down, I knew it would. I knew I wouldn't really get rid of it. I knew things would never be normal anymore. She sighed. But I wasn't ready to feel that desperation again. I silently read the notes from her first psychiatrist regarding this moment. Amanda Jameson had let her nails grow. I felt so bad for her and was naive to allow it, thinking she simply wanted to feel feminine after getting rid of her hair and eyelashes in a psychotic fit. She was so normal after that, so sane, that I got carried away. But she wanted to hurt herself. She mercilessly dug her long nails between the stitches, clawing at her own cornea, making blood and eye goo come out. Her alien hairless figure made it creepier. I'll definitely recommend completely restraining her if the nurses hadn't done it by now. I had to be restrained because I was hurting myself. Now that was the ninth circle of hell. If I thought before that things couldn't get worse, I was wrong. The itching was awful when I could scratch it, but I can't even put into words how painful to my body and mind it was to not be able to scratch. I thought of suicide. The whole time, I had to be awake. So I requested to have someone to talk all the time. Being tied to the bed, it was the only thing that could bring me some relief and distraction. It was a very reasonable request, so the clinic allowed it. I was assigned a very sweet nurse, Samira. She would tell me entertaining stories. It was like the book 1001 Nights. One day, she asked what happened to me, and I told her. She was horrified and ended up quitting after that. But I had piqued the interest of other nurses. One after another, I told them my story so far. This went on for weeks, since I would only be awake for like 4 hours a day. These hours were a nightmare, but having people to chat with really made it less unbearable. I read the notes of her second doctor. As abruptly as it started, Amanda Jameson's unknown psychosis seemed to go away. Being restrained is very difficult, and we tried to avoid it, but it was crucial for her physical well-being. Instead of falling into a depression, the patient fought it, asking to be surrounded by people, and showing positive behaviors. This young woman has a strong and fascinating mind, but I digress. There are strong evidences that her mysterious condition subsided, or is cured, so I'll recommend the hospital to release her, and the family to keep her under constant, but discreet, surveillance. Somehow, after a few weeks, the itch completely disappeared. They still kept me here for a while, but I didn't need to be restrained. It was the first time in a whole year that I felt normal. My hair was growing back, and even the paranoia that it would happen again was under control. I wanted to enjoy the peace while it lasted, you know. The first thing I did was to break up with Henry, to set him free. He didn't have the courage to do it while I was here. The poor guy was a mess, but still trying to be a gentleman. I liked him, but I wanted to make sure that this thing was really gone before I could think about dating. It just wasn't a priority. I didn't feel ill, but I was still a mess physically, and I wasn't ready to go back to college, so I moved back with my parents. Things were fine at first. They were so good to me. They got rid of every piece of furniture or decoration with hairs in the whole house. They even rehomed their poor old dog to my sister's house for my sake. They didn't get rid of their own body hairs, of course, but bought hazmat suits to use whenever they were around me. I insisted I was fine and that it wasn't necessary as long as they wore aprons and caps like you're wearing now. But they didn't want to trigger anything bad in me. It was the first time I realized how they must have been suffering because of my condition. She wiped a tear from her good eye. This is important, Amanda. You can't avoid a mental illness. But thinking about how hard it is on your loved ones will give you strength to fight it the best you can. I didn't feel the hair inside my eye for months. I felt good enough to let my hair grow, as long as my mother washed it for me, using a plastic barrier to keep it from falling in my face. And most of the time, I kept it inside a cap. But it felt good. It felt like preparing to have a completely normal life again. For the first time since I was back, my parents felt confident enough to leave me unsupervised. It was their wedding anniversary, and they deserved to have a good time. They went to a fancy restaurant. It would be just a few hours. I could be fine. I knew I could. But of course, that's exactly when it came back. I don't know if it was because I was free for months, but the agony felt worse than before. It was like I had now many hairs instead of a single strand. I scratched and screamed and cried, but nothing was ever enough. Finally, I came to the conclusion that the only way to get rid of it is getting rid of my eye itself. I sighed and read the third doctor's notes. Amanda Jameson was somewhat of a legend to me, but she's real, and she's back. She was left alone at home for a few hours and burned half her face with acid. The older nurses said she was monstrous when she didn't have a single hair on her body. But I bet nothing can compare to what she looks like now. The left side of her body was better off gone than how it is now, a fleshy, infectious wound showing more of the muscle that should be inside than anything else. There's no skin anymore. Part of the flesh of her nose is missing, and her mouth looks like the worst cleft lip I have ever seen. It's like the left portion of her mouth was liquefied, and it was incorrectly reassembled all over the lower portion of her face. In time, Amanda will be left with nasty scars and a very deformed chin. But miraculously, she can still speak, breathe, and eat. I don't know if this fact makes her less or more bizarre. The eye. I don't know how to describe what's left of the eye. The surgeon had to open the stitched mass of gore and remove it. But the first thing she said when she woke up was that she can still feel the invisible hairs moving inside her empty socket. And she'll still scratch it. This doctor was right about the nasty scars. It's very difficult to look at her. But as her doctor, I have to. Nowadays, Amanda at least has hair. She concluded that the invisible hairs are not actually hair. So it doesn't matter if she gets rid of her hair or not. But worried about making her condition even worse, the clinic forbids the employees to have contact with her without a plastic apron and cap. And she can't wear clothes with hairs, have regular sheets, or get plush dolls either. According to the other doctor's notes, Amanda's condition has been on and off for the past years. Sometimes, she will scratch her eye for months straight. She isn't being restrained anymore because, well, there's nothing else to damage. Her eye is completely gone. Sometimes she has a few weeks of a break from the devastating itch. But I don't want to leave this place. I know it's a matter of time until the itch is back, and I'm scared of what I'll do. I don't want to make my parents even more miserable. I want to keep living and hope that someday someone will discover what it is, and maybe a cure, she said. I noticed that she hasn't been scratching her eye, and I use this term very loosely, for the last 40 minutes. Is the itching gone for now, Amanda? Yes, doctor. It seems so. She smiled. I wish I could beg her to never smile again. This sight made me immediately finish the session to throw up. It's been 2 weeks since I've been assigned to Amanda, and she is in one of her good, itch-free periods. Besides her deformed looks, she's a very easygoing patient. It was so hard typing this, because I had to stop to scratch my eye the whole time. But I feel like talking to other people will help, at least for a while. My left eye is uncontrollably, unbearably itchy right now. What about yours?
Only the dampened, drawn-out creaks of floorboard sounded as I tiptoed to the front door. It was the dead of night, silent as a grave, and it smelled like one too. The air was heavy and rank, as if it too had died. 1 foot down, shifting my weight, the other up. A slow wooden groan, then repeat. Skip the one with a pockmark in it. That one's the loudest. They wake up every time I step on that one. I inched my way to the front door, then took a deep breath, held it, and reached for the doorknob, turning it up, not down. It let off a faint click and I pulled the door out. Fresh air hit me, soothing, and I breathed it in deep. It soothed me too much. I screwed up. The door groaned as I pulled it just the slightest bit too hard, and though it was no louder than a weak cough, My entire being cringed. My breaths quickened. Something rustled behind me. I knew what it was. I closed my eyes. Tendrils snaked around me and pulled. The world faded to black. I awoke to the dim light that was sunrise in my hell of a home. It was never brighter than a moonlit night, even when the sun was out, like a coffee filter had been placed over the sky. Groaning, I sat up and winced as I recalled my mistake the night before. Twisted flesh, jagged, and blacker than night itself hung in front of me. Bright orange eyes peered out, floating on the mass, freely moving across its entire body. I would have been startled, but after God knows how many years, the terror of it had become numb. That one, with the shifty eyes, was Three. He was, as his name implied, the third thing I had ever encountered after crashing at sea. Like the others, he could not speak any human words, but he did have an uncomfortable tendency to whistle. His two eyes fixated on me, and a tendril shot out, propping up my head. Another, carrying a glass of water, gently approached my lips, and I drank from it, as I did every morning, trying to avoid his terrible gaze. A faint dissonant tune came from his being, seeping into my bones. The look of him, the touch, that I had gotten used to. But the sad, slightly off-tune melody he offered me every morning never failed to set a chill into my spine. Three left, and like clockwork, two drifted in. Like a pool of fog, it swirled along the floor, drifting toward me as a cloud in the sky would. I held a breath, out of a perpetual fear that I'd accidentally inhale the monster and let it lift me. I never knew quite what it did during that time, as I always shut my eyes, but part of it was changing my clothes, always the same black set of robes, never any variety, and I don't even want to begin thinking about where they came from. I was, per the schedule, free to roam my run-down little room after the morning ritual. However, any further than that, in one, would come for me. The first few weeks I tried to escape every chance I got, and one would always find me wherever I ran and shake his mangled face at me. I think on some twisted level they're trying to protect me. None of them, not even one, has ever harmed me in any way. And outside the cabin lies a dead sea of wood and bones. But after some unknown amount of time had stretched away from me, living alone in a cabin full of terrors, their intentions didn't matter. I've begged them to let me leave, even if it meant dying slowly, as long as I'd get to die outside of the decaying walls of their putrid little home. If I don't get to see my family again, or my friends, or play the guitar, or anything else that makes life enjoyable, then why am I even alive? I wish I could tell them that, but they just don't understand. It's clear that there's only one way out of that hell. It involves a lot of swimming. The sea took me there, and the sea can take me home. Or it can take my life. The day crawled by as I was forced to spend it in my little wooden dungeon, full of its creaking rotten wood and traitorous books filled with empty pages. I suffered the unending loneliness, the mind-numbing boredom, and stayed awake this time. Napping during the day only made me groggier at night, and if I'm groggy, I make mistakes like I had the night before. There are no more of those to afford. The time finally came after yet another day of eternal emptiness. I decided it was finally the day, one where I either get out, or I never wake up again. I meditated a few moments, steadying my nerves and breaths, and once the moon smudge poked over the horizon, I began. Wait on the toes, one before the other, light on the step, then slowly applying 8. Skip the 3rd, 8th, and 10th floorboards. Hug the wall down the staircase. over the pockmarked board, turning the handle up and not letting the fresh air dull my razor-sharp awareness. I didn't close the door behind me this time. Creeping down the stone porch steps onto the path of decrepit tiles that led to them, I kept my breath held. Then stopping on the last one, I breathed deep twice more and picked up a snapped femur from the ground and ran faster than I ever had in my entire life, this time not into the dead forest, but towards the ocean on our left. I heard him. I heard one clambering across the ground, scattering bones and dirt and twigs, but didn't look back. All my weight pressed forward, every step as long as possible, until one's footwork grew nearer. Then I turned, stopping quickly, and thrust the bone into his mangled furry body. A mouth on his midsection filled with jagged brown teeth wailed. I turned and ran again, just a few more feet, and jumped off the low cliff. The shock of cold bit at my skin and I gulped for air, but used every ounce of my will to try and swim as far as I could. One's wailing faded behind me, but I did not look back. There was no going back. It wasn't long before I could no longer progress or even stay afloat. The world faded black and I sank, swallowed by rough waves of water black as ash. Something pulled me out. My eyes peeled open like someone had glued them shut long ago. There was a strange heaviness and glow to the world, and I was wearing white. When did Two ever dress me in something white? No, Two would never do such a thing. I was no longer in my hell. The smell of wet wood and old porridge was gone, replaced by something lighter and floral. I felt sunlight on me. Real sunlight, not something muted and fake, and welled up without even realizing it. I was free. There was a vortex of gasps and murmurs around me. A woman, I think, approached, cradling my head, holding up a cup of water. Her eyes were as wide as her smile. She whistled Three's favorite tune.
New on Curiosity Stream, Darwin's Theory of Evolution, a scientific breakthrough, but 1920s Tennessee wasn't ready for it.
It became the Bible versus evolution.
Followed a heated trial that changed American education forever on Monkey in the Middle. And it's the country's deadliest highway.
There were something like 178 accidents in a two-year period.
Don't miss the most dangerous road in America. Watch now on Curiosity Stream. Annual plans are $20, just $1.67 a month. Visit CuriosityStream.com.